Chapter 78, An Empty Treasury. 1 week later, the Maharal arrived at the palace of Prince Ferdinand. For reasons he did not wish to explain, he had refused to travel in the magnificent stagecoach that the Archduke had sent to Prague to bring him. Instead, the Tzaddik rented a plain carriage and made his way there, quietly and unnoticed. The prince was impressed by the Maharal's radiant appearance and his refined ways. The astonishment he felt at meeting such an impressive Jew quickly turned to shock as the Maharal rapidly and simply solved his mathematical riddle. "That's amazing!" the prince exclaimed, holding his head with his hands. "I don't believe it! I just don't believe it!" Then he calmed himself and turned to the great Rav. "There is something I must understand," he said, shaking his head in confusion. "How on earth did a rabbi such as yourself become such an expert in mathematics? Don't you spend all your time learning your Torah? What made you learn mathematics? You're not a professor, after all." "I acquired this knowledge," replied the Maharal, "through the learning of Torah, and I did so for the sake of properly understanding the Torah. You must realize, Your Highness, that the wisdom of the Jewish people is built around the Torah's 613 commandments, things that God has told us that we must or must not do. These laws influence every moment of a Jew's life and involve everything he does. In order to practice them properly, we must be familiar with all areas of knowledge. For example, we must learn mathematics and astronomy in order to know how to arrange our calendar, when to introduce a leap year, and so on. We must understand the animal and plant kingdoms in order to know what we may eat and what is forbidden to us. These are just two examples, but there are countless more. We devote ourselves to the learning of Torah in depth, trying to reach the best possible understanding of each of its subjects. While doing so, we become familiar with every possible kind of wisdom, including mathematics." The prince felt nothing but admiration for the Maharal. He now had a different, respectful view of the Jewish people and their ancient Torah. He realized that Ramesha was correct. He had not been told the truth about the Jews and their religion, and that he had a lot to learn. "What shall I pay you for your excellent answer to the riddle?" asked the prince. "Name your price, and I will pay it. You have saved my honor." "Excuse me, Your Highness," the Maharal replied politely. "We have a tradition that dates back thousands of years to our great teacher Moses, the greatest of our prophets, and the one who received the Torah from God at Mount Sinai. We are expected to teach Torah and knowledge to whoever seeks it without asking for payment. I have simply fulfilled my duty and do not wish to receive a reward." Prince Ferdinand did not know what to say. He had spent years in universities and in discussion with experts in every field of knowledge, but in all his life, he had never met a man as wise as this rabbi. He begged the Maharal to remain in his palace for a few days before returning to Prague. He wished to continue their discussion and had a number of further questions. The Maharal agreed to remain for an entire week, and Ramesha provided all of his meals. The Maharal answered the prince's many questions clearly and patiently. At the end of the week, he returned to Prague. At the appointed time, Prince Ferdinand set off to meet his friend, Prince Johann of Moravia. He presented Johann with the answer to the riddle in the presence of other noblemen, as well as his own brother, Maximilian. Everyone was amazed at the brilliant answer. Ferdinand told them that he had received the solution from an extremely wise man who wished to remain anonymous. Sometime later, King Ferdinand, the prince's father, called an emergency meeting of his closest advisors and friends. He asked his two sons, Maximilian and Ferdinand, to also attend. "We are facing a most urgent difficulty," the worried king told those gathered before him. The kingdom's treasury is empty. I'm asking your advice as my trusted advisors and friends on how to refill it." The king then turned to his two eldest sons, Maximilian and Ferdinand. He asked them to present a detailed accounting of their estates. "My estates are in a terrible state," said Maximilian sadly. "Not only do they not bring me profit, but they are causing me heavy losses." This news displeased King Ferdinand greatly. He turned to his other son, Prince Ferdinand, the Archduke of Moravia. "What about you, Prince Ferdinand?" he asked. "How are your estates doing?" Oh, I have nothing to complain about, father, replied the prince with a broad smile. My estates are being managed very well indeed. I earn healthy profits, erect new buildings, and I'm always on the lookout to buy more land. The king was surprised. He looked at each of his two sons in turn, trying to imagine how one of them was so successful while the other was failing so miserably. Prince Maximilian could not contain his surprise and envy. How do you do that? He barked. Well, replied his younger brother, that's a question you'll have to ask the manager of my estates. My success is due to the good and honest Jewish manager that I inherited with the estates. At this point, the king interrupted. Listen here, Maximilian, he turned angrily to him. I remember when the estates that are now under your control used to bring in excellent profits. What have you done to them? Have you been wasting your wealth on nonsense? Prince Maximilian lowered his head in shame and did not reply. We have no choice, the king decided. We will hire an expert accountant to investigate all of your estates. He will see how they are being managed and fix the problems before you lose everything. An expert was appointed to review Maximilian's estates. It did not take him long to discover that Maximilian's manager, a highly intelligent German, had been secretly stealing huge sums of money from the estate's accounts. The manager was immediately arrested and thrown into jail, but that did not help Maximilian recover his lost fortunes. He still owed enormous amounts of debt and was in danger of losing his estates unless he could find a way to immediately begin turning a profit. Prince Ferdinand felt sorry for his older brother. He suggested that they call a meeting with his own brilliant manager, Amasia. Prince Maximilian would explain his problems and ask for Amasia's expert advice. Maximilian was desperate for help, and he happily agreed. Ramesha spent a long time learning the account books of Maximilian's many estates. He then informed him that he had a detailed plan to help the prince recover his losses quickly and even begin to earn handsome profits from his estates. If he continued this plan into the future, his estates would flourish as those of his brother, Prince Ferdinand. Ramesha realized that Maximilian would need a group of honest and expert managers to put the plan into action. He chose three Jewish men whom he knew well. All three were excellent and successful businessmen. Together, they reviewed all of Maximilian's accounts and visited his lands. Once they were confident that they could correct the problems and bring in sizable profits, the three Jewish merchants agreed to take on the enormous task of correcting Maximilian's estates. Prince Maximilian was deeply grateful to his brother, to Ramesha, and to his new Jewish management team. They had saved his estates, his wealth, and his honor. Not long after, the head representative of the church came to meet with the king. He demanded that the king pay the enormous debt that the kingdom owed to the church. This was a religious tax, part of which was used to manage and expand the buildings of the church in the kingdom, and the rest which was sent to the Pope in Rome. However, the kingdom had failed to pay this tax for some time. The powerful representative of the church was now demanding payment, and the king knew he would be in trouble if he did not find a way to pay. The king did not know what to say. He was very upset at the arrogant and disrespectful way that the representative demanded his money. I would gladly pay every last penny, he explained, but it will take me some time. Right now, the kingdom's coffers are very low. Of course they are, the minister shot back. That's because all of the kingdom's Christian citizens are awfully poor. They are penniless, and I'll tell you why. The Jews oppress them and take all their wealth. The Jews are like leeches. They suck the blood of our poor Christian brothers. They steal their wealth and leave them too poor to pay their taxes. King Ferdinand was growing more displeased with the minister by the minute. That's very interesting, he told the representative of the church sarcastically. Just yesterday, I went through the tax accounts in order to see why our treasury was so dry. I was surprised to discover that the majority of the taxes are paid by just a tiny percentage of the kingdom's citizens, the Jews. At the same time, the king continued, barely able to contain his anger, I discovered something else that I am certain you will not be pleased to hear. Almost all the leading members of the church, yourself included, have found all sorts of ways to avoid paying their taxes to the crown.